Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. My name is Dave Charest, content manager here at Constant Contact, and today we're going to be answering some of your top social media marketing questions. We recently held one of our advanced social media webinars, and as you might imagine, with upwards of 700 people or so on the line, we had a bunch of questions. So we figured today would be a good chance to answer some of those we couldn't get to and some of those that were actually answered quite frequently, or asked quite frequently. Joining me today are, to my left,
I'm Ryan Pinkham. I'm a content developer here at Constant Contact, and I think I'm the only one drinking today, drinking a Magic Hat Encore.
And I'm Azure Collier, social media education developer at Constant Contact, and I'm drinking, but it's a Diet Coke.
I'm not drinking anything today. I'm going to see if I can get my throat to stay lubricated without any help whatsoever. So guys, you know, like as I was mentioning, we had close to 700 people on the line with us the other day, and we got a lot of questions coming in through, and we did our best to try to answer them at the time, but as you might imagine, there were a lot of questions coming through.
Yeah.
And it was one of our advanced webinars, so we kind of got away from some of the questions that were kind of more basic level stuff. So we wanted to take an opportunity to discuss some of those here today, because I'm sure there are probably some of those same questions that many of you listeners out there are having as well. So one of the first questions that we had here was in regards to the network Facebook, right? So one of them was, when paying for a Facebook ad, can I control the geographical area that is targeted with them? You know, I would say I think that's one of the coolest things about Facebook ads, right? Regardless of what their effectiveness is, you know, before we get into that, because there are other things that you need to take in consideration of whether or not they're going to be successful for you. But what is really unique about Facebook is the ability to target based on the information people give Facebook, right? Based on the location that they're at, based on their interests, based on whether or not they're connected to people that like your page or not. So I think there's great flexibility there in terms of Facebook ads.
And the cool thing is when you're selecting all this information, it's going to tell you how many people you could potentially reach. So you'll be able to start to tell if this would be effective for you or not.
Yeah, you should have to get a sense right away that, you know, a lot of people are kind of skeptical about paying to advertise on social media. Mm-hmm. Social is kind of thought of as just these free platforms. But you start to get a sense for how valuable it can be. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to make that investment, and it doesn't have to be a huge investment, but it is still an investment, especially for a small business. And you want to make sure you're taking advantage of all these different, you know, targeting features that they have. Especially if this is a huge for a small business who really is only speaking to people within, a couple miles of their store in that general area. So.
Yeah. I think that's a great thing, too. And I think, you know, what's really nice is that with so many people on Facebook now and the ability to actually see some type of metrics associated with the ads that you're putting out there. I mean, think about it. You can spend X amount of dollars and put an ad in your local newspaper. And if you have no way of tracking to see how that works, you don't really know anything about it other than you spent a lot of money to have it there, right? Whereas you can probably spend less money, get on Facebook, target specific people that you want to reach, think of actual ways you want to create a campaign around a particular ad, and then actually get some feedback back to see how many people actually interacted with the ad, how many people actually saw the ad, like what types of things that are actually going on. So, you know, when you're weighing those kind of the cost effectiveness of things for your company and your business, you know, it's definitely an area worth exploring.
And I think if you have been using for Facebook for marketing, you're already generating a lot of useful data and the insights that you could go back and use. You can make decisions about your demographics, who likes your page, who's interacting with your page, the time people are online using using Facebook. Yeah. So you've got a lot of things you can work with to target even better.
Now, do you have something else to add?
Well, no, I was just going to say you can really start to, you know, get a little bit more creative about it, right? Like if you're going to use these different tools, then, you know, take some time to think about how you can target with these sort of things, right? I mean, okay, your first reaction might be, okay, why don't I just target people in my town, right? Mm-hmm. But say maybe you're a seasonal business and you're leading up to your busy season and you know a lot of people are coming in from out of town. Well, if you have an idea of some of the areas that those people are coming from, then maybe look to, you know, target there
or
get creative and start to think a little bit more about your business. And right away, you start to look at Facebook or any other social network really differently than you might have as just, okay, I'm just here to post things and hopefully people see it, you know?
Yep. Cool. So here's another question in terms of Facebook. Now Facebook is something that we would consider a kind of a low volume network in terms of what you need to post in terms of content, right? As opposed to something like a Twitter where, you know, you may be posting upwards of five times a day. So when we're talking that Facebook is low volume, what's the recommended frequency of posts there, Azure?
Yeah, so no more than once a day, and as many between 5 to 7 posts a week.
Yeah.
Anything over that, you know, you're kind of intruding in this space where people are going to have their downtime and they're talking with their friends and family.
Yeah.
So they don't want marketing messages all the time.
So it was one thing to probably understand about Facebook and how it's different from a site like Twitter. Whereas Twitter is like a real-time network, right, where you're posting something, it goes out the minute you post it, and people see it at that time. If they miss it at that time, it's likely, unless they go back through your newsfeed, they're not going to see it. Whereas Facebook works on the newsfeed algorithm that Facebook sets up, where if you post something, yes, it goes live at that time on your timeline, but people actually seeing it and interacting with it may be different based on when they log in and how they normally interact with your page or how they're connected to your business.
Or how they have their own personal timeline set up. I mean, you can choose between most recent and most popular on your timeline.
Yeah.
So, you know, the things that are getting a lot of comments and shares, those, if you have it on most popular, those are going to come up first.
I think part of the thing that comes up here is actually kind of the opposite, where people are saying, you know, we call it low volume you have to do, right? But someone hears that they're supposed to be posting 5 to 7 times in a week. Well, there might be some people listening that say, wow, that doesn't seem low. I mean, that seems like a lot. I have to log into Facebook and do all these things. So it makes you think of the other side of it where it's part of that algorithm is, you know, if you're not posting enough, then you could, you know, hurt your reach on Facebook, right? Because they factor in, you know, how recently maybe someone has viewed something you've done or clicked on something you've done or interacted with something that you've done. So there's sort of the two sides to it there where you want to find the volume you're not doing too much, but you also do want to continue to, you know, have a presence there and not, you know, you never want to go weeks without, without posting. You know?
Yeah. So at the very least, we want to say at least post 3 times a week, right? And then I think, you know, there's a happy, it's finding the balance for your particular community and the people that are connected with you, because there's the other end of that. If you are posting too much, Facebook also weighs into, if you're posting so much that people start ignoring some of your posts, then those start to factor into like those posts you really want to get seen, because people aren't, you know, you're getting some like negative feedback because people aren't engaging with all the posts that you're doing. So it's really like trying to find that balancing act, and it really depends on taking a look at your insights, experimenting with things, and seeing what it is that you're the people that like your page and the people connected with you are actually responding to and enjoying.
And it's not about, you know, when you want to post, what you want to post is about when they want to see it and what they will react to, what they will interact with.
And all bits of information that you can get within your Facebook page's insights at the top of the page. So take a look there and make sure you're looking at that stuff to see how you can tweak and get better. Another question here on the network of Twitter. Let's move there. And hashtags are popular across many platforms, but originated on Twitter. And they're just a way to group conversations together. For example, let's just say hashtag apple pie. It's all one word, apple pie. If you put that hashtag in a tweet, you can click on that hashtag and it will bring you to a stream of tweets with everybody else talking about and using that hashtag and talking about apple pie. So it's a way to categorize information, right? So the question here was, is there an advantage to using a single hashtag consistently when you post on Twitter?
We're doing one right now at Constant Contact, our small business selfie hashtag.
Very good. Yes.
And if you would still like to participate, hashtag small biz selfie. And we're encouraging people to shop at their local small businesses and take a selfie of them with an employee or just shopping at the store.
Yeah.
I think that's where you start to see the benefit of it, is when you're maybe looking at doing campaigns or participating in campaigns. I mean, I think there's other benefits that you can do it as well, but it works really well to sort of kind of, you know, get people excited as you start to start that conversation with people with certain campaigns, or if you're having an event, it allows you to do that. But there are the other types of, you know, hashtags you see people use. There's some that are for certain industries. You know, I know at one point I'd worked for one of the convention centers in Boston. We were always tweeting for, like, event professionals, and you're always using that hashtag, right? Because that's where people are going to learn about the newest stuff happening in the event industry and those sort of things. So I think that there are those benefits. And I don't know if every tweet you send out is going to want to have the same hashtag overall. Right. But, again, maybe for some people that is something to consider.
Well, I think that's a good point you bring up, right? It's about grouping information into the right categories, right? So you know, you may not want to have a hashtag or the same hashtag on every tweet, but it does make sense to at some time, especially if it's something that you're going to be doing recurringly or something like that. Like, take, for example, one of the popular tweets on Twitter is Follow Friday, where people recommend people that or other accounts that they think they get valuable information from that people should follow. So there's like a hashtag FF or a hashtag, they spell it out the whole way. So that's something that's taken off. Like, it's well known on Twitter. A lot of people use it. Maybe you end up creating a campaign or around a particular topic or something, a thing that ends up taking off and that people start to use, so that, you know, you'll want to be using that frequently, so more people will start adding to it. So there's definitely room for that.
Yeah, and you know, one of the mistakes I've seen, and I don't know if you guys have ever seen this, but people doing just like hashtag of like their business name, like in a tweet.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's there's really no benefit there. It's really, there's some sort of, maybe it's not understanding how it works, but I mean, if you click that, it's really going to probably just be you using it. So it's not really helpful, but maybe, you know, if you are a small business, there might be a hashtag for the town or city that you, you know, live and work in, or there's community organizations and other small businesses talking there.
Yeah.
That would probably be a better idea, but I see that sometimes and I'm kind of interested.
It's about categorizing information and gathering stuff around a particular topic. So,
and I think if you want people to use it too, you don't really have to stick to Twitter. You can have it in, you know, maybe your email marketing or other things you're using. And hey, do you want to follow our conversation on Twitter? Make sure you add this hashtag. You follow this hashtag.
Yeah.
I think that's been part of, it's kind of an interesting like evolution with hashtags. Like there was a time when there was still kind of just Twitter where I started to feel like, are these even really valuable? I feel like they're just being used. There's so many tweets in these conversations. But as you're starting to see them show up on like, you know, a Google Plus or in these other places, you start to realize that they are kind of, they are more valuable in those types of places.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's made, I don't know, I've just noticed like on Twitter, like hashtags seem to be becoming more valuable to me. I feel like people are using them a little bit more wisely, that they're kind of, you know, maybe making a resurgence of, of value for, I don't know, if you'd agree.
I am seeing more, you know, just, you know, serious hashtags, not weird stuff that people are just throwing in there to make up. They really do want to group these conversations together.
I am a big fan of the ironic hashtag. Or when it's like a punchline to a joke or something like that. There are fun ways.
There's an art to using that. And I have not figured that out yet.
And then there's the Instagram hashtags, which you see all the time, where there'll be like 30 hashtags and like someone puts on their photo, which is probably not the
best. You probably don't want to. I mean, you know, honestly, you're thinking of it a way to help whatever the information you're sharing become useful for the user or people that may be searching for that.
Right.
So try to keep it within that mind frame that give you the guardrails. Like you can kind of tell like when you're going off the deep end when you've got hashtag in one post that's like, okay, enough.
Right. And like we talked about in the webinar, it's sort of like bolding a word.
Yeah.
So do you want every word that you write to be bold? Yeah. That really stands out in a bad
Some
way.
Some people who write in caps lock do.
Yeah, please do not use a caps on Twitter either.
All right, so the next question here is about LinkedIn. How effective is LinkedIn for nonprofits?
So, I mean, you can use it equally as well as any business can use it. You've got the same tools there. You can showcase what you do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have different populations you serve, you know, under the products and services, you could talk about that, different programs you have, different funds that you use to help the community. So it's another way to get your information out there. And I know a lot of nonprofits are using it also for recruiting, you know, to find people to work for them, for volunteering.
Yeah.
If you're a LinkedIn user on your personal profile, you can list your volunteer efforts.
Yeah.
And those link back to the nonprofit's page.
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the cool things to think about with LinkedIn is, again, it's about building those kind of professional relationships. And especially for a nonprofit, you know, a lot of times you're going to want to build relationships with businesses, local businesses that may become sponsors of your events or, you know, help in terms of donating or just helping the community in general. So there's a lot of room for that in a more professional atmosphere within LinkedIn than there would be on, say, a Facebook or a Twitter or something like that.
I think you start to see for like if you're a smaller nonprofit, I think, you know, the primary use for you would probably be as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you can use the company pages and do something for your nonprofit there, but I think where you'll start to see originally where the biggest benefit will be like just is making those professional connections and doing those sort of things, you know, joining groups if there's groups, you know, that you can be joining those conversations and doing those things. It's not to say that they can't be used as a, you know, as a company page, I think they call it, but I think originally it's really making those sort of connections.
Well, that's a good point about the individual use because a lot of nonprofits rely on each other for resources. Yeah. There's group discussions about, have you guys faced this problem? Or, you know, we want to do this. Has anybody experienced it before? So they do talk to other nonprofits and get ideas from each other in those groups.
Yeah. Last question here is just a kind of general social media question, right? We talk a lot about the idea or the concept of curation, right? Where not everything you create or everything that you share on social needs to be something that you created, right? But there seems to be some confusion at times on what's okay to share, and like, is there a right way to do that? So you're not violating any things in terms of copyright or, you know, images and things like that. So what tips do we have for people there?
Definitely give the person credit that you're sharing, who created the item that you're sharing. Mm-hmm. So maybe you are tagging their Facebook page on Facebook, or on Twitter you're tagging their handle. And, you know, it's a heads up to that person that they're notified they're being tagged. So that's potential for you to get people that they're connected with to see what you've done. They might share what you posted and go, hey, everybody, this page posted to my latest blog post. Everybody check it out.
Yeah.
I think in most cases, you're right, people want you to share their content. Right? I mean, that's the point of putting it out there online. It's why they have share buttons on blog posts and those sort of things. You know, if you do run into a situation, I know specific industries might have certain types of content that shouldn't be shared publicly. Mm-hmm. Again, it brings up the question, then why is it available online? But if you think there is a gray area there, then you might want to be careful what you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're maybe reposting like someone else's blog post on your blog, you're probably better off sort of trying to ask for permission beforehand if you can, or doing those sort of things. I mean, I think it's really kind of using really kind of just basic,
best judgment,
being really kind of courteous. People don't put it under your name if it's their stuff, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing too. It's all in how you kind of present things. You know, you're mentioning blog posts, and like, you know, we'll have a lot of people kind of scrape our content and put them on their sites and kind of publish them as if that was their own content, as opposed to publishing that like, hey, I found this great article, which a lot of people also do as well, which is great, that because we want our content to get out there, where they'll say, hey, I found this great article in Constant Contact about blah, blah, blah. You know, I think this, and here's an excerpt from the thing, and then link back to the original post. That's a great way to create a piece of content that is like you're just kind of offering your insight into it, but without having to create a whole bunch of stuff around it.
And that comment along with the link is important too.
Yeah.
The person writing the post, you know, they'll know what people think, or they'll know what tips, or if they're writing about tips, people really resonated with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's important. Just don't shoot a link out there. You know, why is this valuable? Yeah. Tell people.
And, you know, another thing to think of too is that if you do get stuck and you're not really sure what to do, you know, a lot of times, a lot of people are connected online. Ask. You know, you may be surprised that you may actually develop a relationship with somebody that may end up helping your business down the road, you know? So it doesn't hurt to just be like, hey, I really enjoyed your so-and-so. Would you be cool if I shared this on my Facebook page? You know, again, a lot of times people who are in the know and are kind of doing this stuff want their stuff to be shared, so it's usually not a problem. You just get into those tricky areas when you're taking stuff and passing it off as your own and not including something back to the original source.
Mm-hmm. I think it's great to share other people's content, and I think just based on the fact that we're having this conversation, it's a sign that why small businesses should be creating their own content, right? That this is actually a thing, that people are out there sharing your content, and that now we're having discussions about how to actually do it, right?
Yeah.
So I think sharing other people's content is great. You should definitely be doing it, especially on social and things like that.
Yeah.
But I think when you're ready, I mean, you know, start a blog. You know, maybe it is starting off just sharing someone else's blog post, giving your take on it, and linking back. I think that's okay starting off. But I think it really is kind of a good sign that why small businesses should be creating their own content as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, guys. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We'll catch you next time on the Speakeasy Marketing Roundtable. Bye-bye now.